No antidote injection could possibly prevent something from melting one's skin.
Welcome to Sincast, presented by CinemaSins.
All right, everybody, welcome to the Sincast. This is Chris Atkinson from CinemaSins, joined as always by the voice of CinemaSins, Jeremy Scott.
Hey.
Mm-hmm. And from Music Video Sins, Barrett Sher.
Finger guns.
Yeah.
See, when you say it, it gets across.
Finger guns.
Yeah.
Do we want to talk about our Patreon? Do we want to talk about
some
stuff there?
It's our Sin Club. It's for exclusive members only. That makes it sound weird. No, just sign up. Go to patreon.com/CinemaSins, and you can get perks for every tier. There's, three or four tiers that you can sign up for. You get everything early. You get exclusive content, including what we call our Sinmentaries, which is probably, the most fun thing that we do for the Sin Club, mm-hmm. where we essentially react to our previous videos. We've been going through the first ones that we've written on with all of our team, and it's been fun as hell, man, to go back to Batman v Superman, you guys doing the Amazing Spider-Man, and that's awesome. And you can get that in our Sin Club, yo.
And you also get all of our content early at the lowest mm-hmm. tier. So $3 a month in the Sin Club, and you get everything before the public gets it. And I always forget that, but I have at least two Twitter followers who will react to the Sincast, this podcast, sometime on Sunday night. And I'm always like, oh, fuck, I always forget that you get that shit early. And spoilers. Anyway, it's good stuff. What I appreciate even more than, the perks and the support, which is awesome, is the community that's developing there, mm-hmm. Which we got to see a little more of during our Digital Sin Week as they were commenting alongside during live recordings of this and our other podcasts. And they're over on Discord, and you get special access to special channels on Discord if you are a Sin Club Patreon member. And they're just really cool people, really supportive people, people who love pets and movies and being nerds. And we invite you to join them.
Mm-hmm.
And there are so many extra Sins vids that we have done. If you just count the Sin Week ones alone, that's 9 extra videos. But there's several other on the top of that.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
We have done. Stuff like A Few Good Men and Bad Times at the El Royale,
or some
people like to call it Battle at the El Royale. Yes.
It's amazing. We've done a lot of our favorite movies just for the Sin Club, actually.
Yeah. And so there are plenty of never, not public Sins videos available to you to watch through that Sin Club. So it's worth it. I'd say it's worth it.
It definitely is. In preparation for the game that we're about to be playing later on, I went back, and there is a there's a podcast specifically for Sin Club members of Jeremy and I doing Seinfeld trivia that I hadn't listened to in 2 years, I think.
You had to bring that shit up, didn't you?
You did better than you remember. You did awesome, actually. And I did worse than I remember.
You won.
Well, spoilers.
Oh, sorry.
It was fun, though. It was fun. And Jonathan was there as the scorekeeper. And I had forgotten the questions, and I had forgotten how many I got wrong. But it opens – the cold open is Chris asking George – said his brother got a woman pregnant and her name was this. And we were like, what the fuck? Mm-hmm. That's the most obscure Seinfeld question ever. it was fun though. Anyway, yes, sign up patreon.com/CinemaSins. Just wanted to let you guys know in advance. Do it. It'll be fun.
So as Barrett alluded to, we're going to do something we have never done other than that Seinfeld trivia thing. We're going to play a game.
Can I?
I want to play a game.
Do you want to play a game? I would like to give my personal backstory on this game, if you don't mind. I'll be brief.
Sure.
I was a guest on a podcast that I recommend you check out called Lo-Fi Top 5 Movies. And every episode, these two guys, who are both awesome people, do a top five list. The one that I was on was top five movies I'd like to go back in time and watch in theaters that I didn't get to the first time for whatever reason. and instead of just doing that list, they made a game out of it where for every movie on your list, you also give, before you give the title, you give the year or the date it came out, and then you give the position on the AFI top 100 list, a position on the IMDb top 250 list, a Metacritic score, and two actors, usually more obscure actors from the movie, not the stars. And then people try and guess. And if you can't get it, then they also give you a five-word made-up description. like for Untouchables, my five-word description was naive cop versus violent criminal. I forget what it was. I already forgot. Anyway, I had such a good time trying to guess and trying to stump these guys. And it made me think we should, you know, consider doing a game ourselves. And so what we came up with, I'll let Barrett intro, but I do want to shout out that podcast as both one that you should listen to, because those guys are easy to listen to and they love movies, but also they're the inspiration for us deciding to create a game ourselves, and hopefully this doesn't crash and burn.
We'll see how this goes. So yeah, after Jeremy said that, you know, we were spitballing about what we could do, and you know, I was thinking about IMDb and how much, you know, it's the internet movie database, and I was thinking about how much stuff you could mine from that. You know, there's so many different sections, there's so many different sub units of, did you find this interesting and stuff like that, why it was rated this particular way by the MPAA. And I was thinking about the goofs section, and you know, people think that we at CinemaSins use this, and we actually referenced that in a video recently. We use this as like a springboard for our sins. No, we don't.
By the way, if it did, our videos would be unfucking watchable.
Right.
That's for some people already that were unwatchable. But think about what it would be, you know, if it was like just the goof section of the fucking IMDb. Holy shit.
Her arm is pointed at a 90-degree angle here, but now it's 45.
Oh, my God.
It's not that we would never make such a specific observation. It's just that that's not all we ever do.
And right.
Like, I think that to people who write those, God bless them, are more the people we're making fun of than the people we are. And that's why we also say things like Idaho is not a real place. Mm-hmm. And yet that is ignored by... Mm-hmm.
So we're going to use them as fodder. So basically what we're going to do is I am the trivia master for today's episode, and I will be asking the guys, giving them a year for context, and then giving them a list of goofs that are found in a particular movie. They are going to base their guess of the movie based on those goofs. We're calling it Guess the Goof.
Yes, the goofs. And yes, we are, first, before you say it, we are the goofs. And we know that joke is going to be easy to make.
That's right. That's right.
Preemptively joking ourselves. Nice.
And plus, this isn't the only like way this game may go. We may have several other games with other kinds of criteria to it and everything, just depending on what we're thinking of at the time. But if this is real popular, then maybe we just do this more often, but we're just kind of trying some stuff out. So
yeah, yes, I think it'll be fun.
We're shooting a pilot.
As I mentioned to the guys in pre-show, this may be way too easy or way too hard Some may be way too hard, some may be way too easy. But I think there's an identifiable clue, at least one of these four. So let me give the ground rules real quick that we came up with. What we're going to do is Chris and Jeremy are going to be playing Guess the Goofs today. And I will be asking the questions. There's going to be five rounds of questions, one for each of the contestants, which means 10 movies overall. These will increase in difficulty, or at least what the person who's asking them thinks is increasing in difficulty, up to four goofs per movie. So sometimes you can answer it in one, sometimes you could answer it in three, and so on and so forth. But after the fourth one, if the contestant does not get it, the other person can steal for 1 point. Each response will be worth 1 point. Whomever has the correct responses at the end of five rounds wins in the likely event of a tie. The person who required the fewest numbers of clues wins.
Yeah, I hope you're going to keep track of all that. Yeah, but you're going to need to email me that document when it's my turn. And also, do we get to guess and be wrong? Or, like, if you give us one goof, can I say Tron? And if it's not Tron, do I get penalized or do I just get the second goof?
Yeah, I think this should be like the step down challenge that we used to do at trivia. I think you only get one response. Okay. You can talk to yourself about it, like, is this Tron maybe or is this whatever? But we'll do a final answer thing, essentially.
That's great. No, and then if
there's
I
not
four,
a countdown. There's not a countdown of points, though, through this.
Right.
What I'm, like the count, right. The step down would always start with a 15 and then a 10 right. and a 5. This one doesn't sound like it's doing that. Like, are we going to give all the goofs at once, or are we going to do one goof and then try to guess it there?
Yeah, we'll do one goof, and if you want to lock it in, that's what I meant by the step down. There's only one final answer. There's only one opportunity to give the answer. If you want to try it,
there's no incentive though, is what I'm saying to trying to guess it on the first one. If you're going to get all of the other ones,
well, if we tell
the incentive, yeah, the incentive is to get it in as few clues as possible. So that would help you win at the end. Meaning the final, in the event of a tie, the final count will go to how many people get
saying.
The fewer.
I see what you're saying. So, clues. Like, once we're done at the end, we count out how many times. Okay.
Yeah. It behooves you to get it in as few clues as possible.
All right.
It's behooving.
Okay.
But we do need some cheesy game show music.
That's true.
Yeah. I think that was good enough right there.
Suck my ball.
All right, fellas. Let's do this. We're going from easy. I've named these as easy for the first round, kind of easy for the second round, easy medium for the third, hard medium for the fourth, and then hard for the fifth.
Okay.
So easy.
Hard. Erection?
Light, easy.
Oh, yes. But thanks for noticing.
Yes.
Medium easy was my nickname in high school.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Also, to give you guys more context for this, so we're not just picking out all the movies ever made, we are doing 25 years ago, 20 years ago, 15 years ago, 10 years ago, and 5 years ago.
Shit.
So 1996, 2001, 2006, 2011, and 2016.
Do I have to do that when I make the questions?
You can do whatever you want to, baby.
Awesome.
What that means is, for the easy round, we are starting in 1996, folks.
All right.
And I'm going to choose Jeremy to go first.
All right.
This is right when I was all being right. called medium easy. Junior in
1996 movie. Okay. This is the first goof. For operational security reasons, Navy SEALs never acknowledge each other by rank, nor do they use their surnames. Everyone on a SEAL team, even the officers, only address each other by first name.
96. Well, I got a guess, but I'm too scared to fail. Also, you should both know that years are not going to help me at all. If it came out in 96, I think it came out in 94. So good luck me.
We're gonna get into the future here in a little bit, too.
I need another goof, please. Quizmaster, may I have another?
Okay. The final scene is located in Kansas. However, when Carla and Stanley leave the church, they drive towards mountains in the distance. There are no mountains in Kansas.
Kansas?
Chris, do you know it?
I do know what this is.
Oh, fuck. 1996.
There are no mountains in Kansas.
Okay, it's bad radio, and I don't know it immediately, even though I should.
No, dude, do your thing. Work your way through it, man.
Well, you know, it's just you guys talk about yourselves.
How many do you have per each movie? Up to four? Okay.
Mm-hmm. I have four for each ones. And I'll read the fourth one, even if you guys get it before then.
Mm-hmm. Navy Seals.
You want one more, or you want to?
I need another. I'm going to lose.
I think you'll probably... I don't want to give anything away. Okay.
This is the easy round, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
The coordinates given for Alcatraz when the missile is launched are 6725 north by 3725 west. These actually put you in Greenland. Alcatraz is actually 3740. Please wait until I'm done with the question. Alcatraz is actually at 3749 36 north by 122 25 23 west, not in Greenland. What was your answer again, sir?
It's the Rock.
Welcome to the Rock.
Folks. He got it in the easy round. Let me read you the last goof because it's my favorite, which is an actual goof. No antidote injection could possibly prevent something from melting one's skin. All right. So Jeremy gets it in three clues. Congratulations. Nice job.
Thank you,
Christopher.
You.
Yes.
Here is your first one, also from 1996. First goof. At the $100 minimum bet table in the casino, the cards disappear from the dealer's hands when he counts Mike's money.
What was the year?
1996.
Oh, it's still 96.
Yep. Do you guys get one from each year, the same year?
They count Mike's money. Let's go over to the next one.
All righty. I like this one a lot. Although the guys all lament the fact that there's no fighting in the version of video hockey they're playing, that version is NHLPA 93, which did, in fact, have fighting, as well as being able to make someone's head bleed. Fighting was not removed from the series until NHL 94.
The movie is Swingers.
There it is.
Yeah. They put fighting back in these games, by the way, at least the most recent ones I've played.
There's fighting in what?
You can fight in most hockey games that I played.
You know, it was weird. The first clue when it was like casino and Mike, I was like, okay, the Mikey McDermott in Rounders, but Rounders is 98. Right. So I was like, okay, this can't be the answer. And then I forgot about Swingers and, you know, and Mike.
See,
Mike
I would never have guessed 96 for Swingers. I mean, I might have guessed the movie from the Goofs.
You would have guessed the movie for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's why it's important to give a year concept or at least a range or something like that, because could literally anything. Mm-hmm. Anyway, great job, guys. Both got the easy round. Chris in two clues, Jeremy in three clues. Very nice. And also, there are no mountains in Kansas. Okay.
Yes.
The kind of easy second round. These are movies from 2001. All right. So get your 2001 caps on.
It's a good year.
Jeremy goes first.
Okay.
2001 movie.
Okay.
First goof is... No mention is made on exactly how an English peasant manages to fool everyone into believing he is a nobleman from a very German-Dutch region of Europe. While the uneducated masses might believe that anything Chaucer tells them, William interacts with plenty of upper-class people who would not be deceived so easily.
A Knight's Tale.
Boom! Wow! Wow! I don't think anyone knows that movie that well. Chris, would you have gotten that from me?
Fuck no.
Oh, really? I have hate watched that movie 5 or 6 times.
I was about to say, A Knight's Tale is exactly like up Jeremy's asshole. So.
Hey, I had a Shannon Sossaman phase. Like, I think
didn't we all? We all had Shannon Sossaman.
And as soon as you said convince somebody that he's a nobleman, I figured that's what it was. And then you said Chaucer.
I've seen this movie maybe 1.5 times. Let me read the other goofs just so we have them in context. In the final shot, when Jocelyn embraces William, the back of her dress is seen. The overlap portion of the center back zipper is clearly visible. May have been a little bit. Now, what would have given it away for me is any mention of joust. So Sir William's armor is removed during the final joust, revealing a large bloodstained hole in his padded shirt. The bloodstain is visible later in the scene, but the hole is completely gone. And the last goof is several shots during the final joust. This is funny, actually. Several shots during the final joust have an overexposed milky appearance caused when a camera assistant dropped and split a film magazine on the final day of shooting.
Nice. Way to go, camera assistant. Hey, yeah, unrelated, I saw an article that talked about in I Know What You Did Last Summer, when she, like, the camera spins around her and she's like, "What are you waiting for?" You remember this part?
Oh, yeah.
That was actually directed by a kid who won a contest to direct a scene in that movie.
I saw that. That's awesome.
Jennifer Love Hewitt was like, when he told me what he wanted to do, I was like, seriously? And it's become like the most iconic shot in the whole movie.
Yeah.
Anyway, there you go.
One of the scary movies?
Yeah, I think. And then I think like Anna Faris gets like hit by a bus or some shit when
because she's out on the ramp. What are you waiting for? It does kind of come out of nowhere, too. If you watch that scene and I Know What You Did Last Summer, it's like they're talking. Mm-hmm. And like, then they find something in the car or whatever.
Yeah.
And then like, and she's talking, everybody's talking at a normal level. And then all of a sudden she goes down the street. She's like, "What are you waiting
for?" Yeah.
Very weird. Jeremy getting that in one clue because the Knight's Tale is apparently his jam. Mm-hmm.
Should I be ashamed?
No. It's fine. I need to watch it again.
Brian Helgeland, Heath Ledger, right? Shannon Sossaman, and Mark Addy should be ashamed. That's
I did say I hate watched it. It's also Alan Tudyk is in this.
Oh, yeah.
And Jennifer Bettany? Connelly's husband, Paul Bettany. You said Paul Bettany.
Oh, I didn't realize that was Jennifer Connelly's husband.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think ever since Beautiful Mind.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, well, good for him and her. Anyway, all right, Chris, we are getting another 2001 movie.
Mm-hmm.
Got a burp, sorry. Okay.
Nice.
Here's the first goof. When a ranger throws out a frag grenade, Sergeant Eversman warns his men by yelling, "Grenade!" Proper designation would be to yell, "Frag out!" as yelling "grenade" warns the men of an incoming grenade, not an outgoing one.
Jesus. It's not A Knight's Tale, Chris.
It's not. That's the first one that I removed from consideration. I can picture this movie, but I can't go to the next one.
The appearance of Hoot's rifle changes throughout the movie, often between shots. This is especially noticeable when he is firing out the window of the Humvee. Yeah, I debated on whether including names of characters should go in here, but I think there's just so many names about that it's hard to narrow it down.
I've got something in mind, but we'll go to the next one.
Okay, here we go. Sergeant Eversman's chalk is portrayed to have moved on foot to Elliot's crash site. This is not true, as his chalk was picked up by Colonel McKnight's convoy as they were traveling to the crash site. Due to the sprawling layout of the city and the heavy fire they were under, They were forced to return to the base, and Sergeant Eversman's chalk never got to the crash site.
Jesus.
God, have I even seen this movie?
Yeah.
You have.
Oh, so Jeremy knows it.
No, well, I'm pretty sure, but I don't know for sure.
I don't remember anything about chalk. Is there any more?
Yes, there is more. Let me get the one that I had. Numerous times in the film, when any helicopter lands, we hear the familiar chirp, chirp, chirp sound. This is characteristic only of the famous Bell H-13G, the MASH chopper, and then only one of the rubber dry belt disengaging from the rotor column.
Okay, I think I've only seen this movie one time. It's Black Hawk Down.
It is indeed. It is nice. Indeed.
Nice work.
You've only seen that one time?
Yeah.
It's not an easy movie to watch.
That would be right in your
wheelhouse. I've only seen that once. And I know somebody, this somebody wasn't in, was it Kosovo? Was that where it was?
Mogadishu.
Somalia.
Yeah.
He said he knows a lot of people who were involved in that. He said that it's really hard to watch that movie, but.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
But no, I've only seen it once. So like all of this stuff that was, you were describing, I was like, I mean, it sounds like an Iraq war, Afghanistan type of thing, but I really can't think of any.
Yeah.
And that's the only thing I could think of was Jarhead, but that came out in like 2004 or something like 2005. Yeah.
That's another, everybody in that movie went on to be famous if they weren't already. Like that movie was stacked.
Mm-hmm. Ridley Scott, baby. 7.7 IMDb. Josh Hartnett, Ewan McGregor, Tom Sizemore, Eric Bana, William Fichtner. Isn't Batman in there? I thought Batman was in that one. Or is he in Christian Bale?
No, I think Tom Hardy's in it, though.
Tom Hardy was in everything at that point.
He really was.
Sneaky, this Tom
Hardy.
He was
the main villain in a whole goddamn Star Trek movie, and I never learned his name until he got more famous.
Was it Nemesis?
Yeah, Nemesis. He's the Picard clone.
Yeah. Picard and Eric Bana was a Star Trek villain.
Oh, Eric Bana is one of my favorite Star Trek villains ever. He chewed that shit up. Hi, me Christopher.
All right, boys. So everybody's one for one or two for two. Now we're getting into the medium or medium easy. Okay.
Yeah. It's my wheelhouse. In high school.
Mm-hmm. Jeremy, like you go first.
Medium easy. Yeah.
We are now in 2006 movies.
Oh, good. I'm glad we skipped 2005.
Frighteningly, 15 years ago, folks.
That is frightening.
Crazy. I remember seeing both of these movies in the theater.
Well, this is going to be, I was actually working for Kroger at this point, so I even moved on from that. But I wasn't seeing a ton of movies, so knock wood.
I'm pretty sure, as I said, I'm pretty sure that you guys have seen all of these movies. Anyway, so 2006 movies, Jeremy, here are your goofs. First one is, immediately following the planting of the crystal seed, a cigar is dropped onto the utility corridor and a natural gas line ruptures. The cigar ignites the natural gas. In reality, a cigar burns at around 400 degrees Fahrenheit, while natural gas ignites at around 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit. Therefore, the cigar could not possibly have ignited the natural gas flooding the corridor.
Should I go for it?
Oh, you feel like you got a little bead on this?
I do. Give me one more.
All right. Second one. This is the long one, so bear with me. When the Gatling gun begins to fire in slow motion, you see bullets coming out of the barrel. Hang on. The ratio of tracer to non-tracer bullets in the movie is 1-2, and that is incorrect. The correct ratio should have been 1-4, which is standard worldwide in machine guns. No gun would have a 1-2 ratio because the tracer rounds wear out a barrel much more quickly than the non-tracers do. Also, the Gatling gun has 6 barrels, so with a 1-2 ratio, 2 barrels are always firing nothing but tracer rounds and would make the barrels wear unevenly. I cannot believe that you have a guess on this based on these two goofs, but I trust you.
I have a guess, but now that sin went on so long.
That goof, not sin.
That, oh, yeah. That goof went on for so long. I'm going to need another clue, man. You've shaken my faith in my... I should have written it down so I could show you what it was in case I end up being right. But hit me with
write it down. Write it down.
All right. All right. I'm going to kick myself if this is what it is.
All right. All right. We'll see here. The EMP burst that triggers the docking malfunction of the NASA shuttle to the plane shuts down all technology, including engines, phones, etc. However, the microphone of the guide is still functioning perfectly.
It's Superman Returns.
Whoa! He got it! He got it! Yeah, okay. Wow!
What gave it away to me is not your fault. It's the way the goof was written, but you said something about a crystal... Something crystal in that first sentence, and I immediately pictured kryptonite. I don't know why, but I was thinking Superman Returns the whole goddamn way.
Wow. Chris, were you on the same page?
No.
Man.
I haven't seen that movie in fucking forever and hated it, so...
I only saw it once in the theater. So, I don't think
none of those clues meant anything to me. Nothing. I was dead inside. I was dead inside to all of those clues. We famously talked about that Gatling gun thing in the Sins video, though. Just went on and on about it.
Yeah, I remember that scene.
Yeah, because Jeremy just had a class about Gatling guns, and he was able to just recite that. We didn't have to write it down. He just said it there, right then and there, when he was doing his narration. He just said, oh, by the way, I'm going to add this in the script real quick about the Gatling gun.
And the tracer rounds, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
You're kidding, right? I didn't hear some of that, but okay.
Yeah, we didn't talk about the fucking Gatling gun.
The tracer rounds. Have you seen that movie multiple times, Jeremy?
No, I haven't. Actually, yes, I saw it in the theater, and then I saw it when you sinned it, but not otherwise.
Same here, but I couldn't have gotten that shit after the first goof.
I wish I had the balls, but I'm ballless. Next time and I'll be wrong.
No, that was impressive. I have put Superman Returns so far out of my mind that even as I was looking at these things, I was like, there's no way anybody's going to get this.
I mean, I was like, Crystal Seed Cigar, that should just immediately tell me what the fucking movie is.
All right.
You can't come up with it.
All right, Chris, here is your 2006 movie. Here's the first goof. Although set in Ohio, there are several shots from by the pool area that show large mountains in the background, which Ohio does not have.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's it.
That's it.
Oh, so on Superman Returns, we get Crystal Seed and fucking all this shit. I get Ohio and mountains. Good. No problem.
There are no mountains in Kansas or Ohio.
Would you like me to go into the next
one? Let me see if I can think of any movie set in Ohio in 2006. No, go ahead.
Okay. When Bartleby receives his rejection letter from Ohio State College, the word that should be than in we will receive more than 4,000 applications.
I have a thought of what it might be, but I'm going to take one more clue.
All right. You can do that. All right. Here we go. When Bartleby receives the letter telling him about the meeting with the State Board of Accreditors, the letter says that the meeting is at 11 a.m. But when Bartleby and company arrive for the meeting, they tell the receptionist that their meeting is at 3 p.m.
Okay. You know, if you know somebody named Bartleby in a movie, it's that movie. He said that word so many times now, it's lost all meaning.
I think the movie's Accepted.
Yeah! He got it. Wow.
And again, just like Jeremy, I wish I had the balls to do it earlier, because as soon as he said Ohio State and all that, I had Accepted in my head, but Wasn't enough.
Well, that's good. But I mean, yeah. So we're getting around the right area. Man, this may end up being a tight as my butthole right now.
Mm.
All right. But listen, we're moving into hard medium.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh. Mm-hmm. Oh. Mm-hmm. Now there are no mountains in Indiana.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right.
These gentlemen are movies from 2011. Whopping 10 years ago, folks. Ten years. All right. 2011 movies. Jeremy, here's your first goof.
Yeah.
When Marissa is returning fire through the door in the hotel room, the slide of her gun locks back, signifying an empty magazine. However, in the subsequent shots, she continues to fire, even though she has never shown reloading her gun. I know this is a goof that never happens in action movies.
It doesn't.
And they always show the person reloading their gun. But this is a goof for this particular movie.
What did you say her name was? Marissa?
Marissa.
Give me another clue, please.
Another clue. All right. A bit of a long one, but I like this one a lot. Eric decides to swim from Sweden to Denmark across the strait between them. Øresund, which is the strait. Presumably to avoid border checks, but not only are both Denmark and Sweden, as well as Finland, members of the EU, and also part of the Schengen area, he could have traveled uninterrupted by land or sea from Finland to Denmark due to the Nordic Passport Union using public transport. His method of entering seems a bit odd, as he later in the film arrives in Berlin by bus.
That crazy Eric. He's always swimming across fjords with no reason.
I know.
Straits, fjords. Fucking Eric.
Straits, fjords.
Fucking Eric. 2011. You make me feel like I didn't see any movies in 2011. Eric, what are you doing that straight, buddy? What are you doing swimming from Sweden to Denmark? What are you doing? That's not how you get there, buddy. You could take public transport. All right, give me another clue.
All right, two left. During the final scene in the amusement park, Marissa is wearing shoes, but at one point she is seen wearing calf-high boots. Back to Marissa.
It's like you could have given these in reverse order and they would have felt easier as they went along. Like, these clues are not helping. I
think that would defeat the purpose.
Well, I got the other ones right. Shit, Eric. Marissa.
Final scene is in the amusement park. Marissa is wearing shoes, but at one point she is seen wearing calf-high boots.
Boots instead of shoes. Marissa, amusement park. Final scene. It's not Batman. Give me the
movie definitely describes every movie that was made in 2019, by the way.
All right.
Everything ended in the fucking amusement park in 2008.
All right. Here's the final goof. The main character has been carefully prepared to kill Marissa, but never shown a photograph to identify her.
The main character, huh? Is it Eric? Is he the main character and you just take his name out of the clue? I don't know why, because you already said Eric before, so it's got to be another name that would give it away. He's been trained to kill, primed to kill?
Yeah, I mean, the goof says the main character has been carefully prepared to kill Marissa, but never shown a photograph to identify her.
Oh, fuck me. Marissa. It's not Marissa Tomei.
Marissa Tomei!
An Oscar winner, Jerry.
2011. Swimming across fjords. No mountains in Indiana. I'm going to go with... Shit. I don't know when these movies were made. I don't know. It's been trained to kill. Marissa. But never shown a picture of Marissa. Why would you do that? Is it... Oh, fuck. I don't know. Manchurian Candidate.
Chris, would you like to try to steal this one?
My guess is Hannah.
Chris gets the points for this round. yes.
The main character like being Hannah. On,
yes. Yeah. I can't say the actual title of the movie. In the
right. That was what was throwing me on this too, because I, you know, who the fuck is Marissa? You know,
and it's Eric Bana again, right? That plays her dad,
yeah,
or her trainer.
Yeah, yeah.
So his name is Eric in the movie, but yeah, Hannah. I figured that that final one would get you, and it, I feel like was Hannah on like on your mind?
I thought of Hannah one time when I was cycling through assassin type movies. I had a hard time shaking Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
Oh.
when you did the swimming across the fjord thing, man, like I can't even tell you where that happened. And I've seen Hannah three times. I don't remember that shit. I thought, was it in the
so
night
Superman
and day?
Superman Returns like that. Hannah, no.
Yeah, yeah. Ups and downs of it's, the Guess yeah, the Goofs game.
It shows you the range of this game. All right, Chris.
All right.
You got an opportunity to pull into a commanding lead here. Also a 2011 movie. Here is your first goof. In Joe's room is a model of the space shuttle, and the external fuel tank is red/orange. This change did not occur until the 1980s as a cost-saving measure. Shuttle models before this had a white tank.
Let's go to the next one.
All right, next one. When the deputies are eavesdropping on the USAF communications via radio, an airman can be heard saying Lima, as in the NATO phonetic alphabet. However, he pronounces it the wrong way, saying Lima, as in the Ohioan city, rather than Lima, which is the correct pronunciation. So L-I-M-A, I should say.
The who is saying what now?
When the deputies are... Yeah, I know, that's a long one.
Marissa
when the deputies,
and Eric.
Ah, yes, fjords.
When the deputies are eavesdropping on a USAF communications via radio, meaning the Air Force, the airman can be heard saying L-I-M-A. However, he pronounces it the wrong way, saying Lima rather than Lima, which is the correct pronunciation.
Okay. Let's go to the next one.
All right. When the boys break into a classroom at the school, they break a window from a door and clear out all the glass. Later, when the soldiers come in, the same door now has some of the glass still there.
All right, I guess I'll go with your final one.
Okay. Just after the train wreck, one of the boys describes the small block shapes they found in the train's cargo hold as looking like white Rubik's cubes or something. Originally called the Magic Cube in 1977, the toy company Ideal would not rename the toy Rubik's Cube until it was sold in the United States after May of 1980.
Okay.
Jeremy, you just got some Rubik's Cubes, right? Nice.
It's a smooth moving little motherfucker. But
yes. So Joe's got a rocket that has the wrong colors in his room.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking Joe, and, man.
I know. Fucking Joe. The deputies over here are USAF communication, and they hear the guy pronounce Lima wrong or Lima wrong. They refer to Rubik's Cubes, even though they don't know what the fuck those are.
Got it.
Which, in a train, fuck. All right, give it to Jeremy.
You want to venture a guess?
Super 8?
You got it, baby.
Whoa. Whoa, back in the game.
Whoa, a tremendous reversal. Oh my God.
I would never have been able to tell you that came out in 2011. Never. Never.
What gave it away? Was it the train wreck one or was it the anachronisms?
It was the third one.
Oh, the boys breaking into the classroom?
Boys breaking into the classroom. Once you said the boys, I started thinking young cast, and everything else fell in place after that.
Interesting. Mm. Interesting. Wow. All right. All right. Hannah and Super 8 were the two from 2011. I like both those movies. All right. We got a tie ball game here.
All right.
So we're going to the clues. Both of you took four, but it was the other person's steal. Interesting. I'm going to note that. Both steals.
All I could think of on that was it's got to be a period piece and it's got to be a young cast, but I could not think of Super 8 for the life of me.
That's sneakily. Now, talk about a movie. I would not be able to tell you what year it came out. That could have been in 2008 or 2013. I don't think I would probably even pick 2011 whatsoever. But hey, there you go. Super 8. Super 8. All right, folks. Here is our last round, the hard round.
Okay.
These are movies from 2016. That's right. 5 years ago, a year in which there are a lot of movies. So that's what it's known for being, you know, the most movies.
That's when you look up 2016 and Wikipedia, it's like the year of the most movies.
The year of a ton of fucking movies. Mm.
That's right.
It's also the first full year of the Syncast existence. So that's true. All right, Jeremy, you go first. Uh-huh. 2016 movies. Here's your first goof. When Rachel goes to Scott's house and he gives her coffee cup changes positions on the table, even though she hasn't touched it yet.
When Rachel goes to Scott's house.
Remember, this is the hard category, so
I know. Apologies. I'm still allowed to think I might get it.
Sure, man.
Rachel and Scott. Eric.
With Fjords.
And Marissa. Rachel and Scott. Okay, hit me again.
Okay, second goof. The article describing the discovery of Megan's body says that Westchester Police says they're investigating a murder case. Westchester Police is a plural noun, so it should have read Westchester Police say, et cetera, et cetera. This kind of sounds like a CinemaSins type of thing, but it's not. That would be a lame sin, though.
Yeah.
How would you make that into a joke? You want me to repeat it? That was a lot going on there.
Yes, repeat it, please.
The article describing the discovery of Megan's body says that Westchester Police says they're investigating a murder case. Westchester Police is a plural noun, so it should read Westchester Police say, etc., etc.
Westchester Police say. Give me another one. Rachel and Scott.
Here's a classic one. Classic goof. The action in the tunnel takes place when it is dark, but when Tom takes Megan out to the woods after that, it is light out. This movie was directed by Ed Wood.
Megan's dead. Megan's body. So Megan has to be alive at some portion in this movie for her to be a body that gets.
I like
discovered.
How you're putting the plot together.
I certainly don't know what the fuck this movie is. Rachel and Scott, Megan's body. Who drags Megan's body in the woods? Ricky? What'd you say? Steve?
It's Ricky Steve. It's Ricky Steve. Hi, Ricky Steve. What are you doing with that body?
What is that? Who is that? Eric kills a body? No, he swims the fjord. Who took the body in the woods?
Okay. The action in the tunnel takes place when it is dark, but when Tom takes Megan out to the woods after that, it is light out. Now, it doesn't say she's alive or dead at that point.
Tom takes Megan. Tom, you pesky. Give me the last one, goddammit.
When we see the train from the window of the white villa passing on the track way beyond the garden, it is obvious that the distance is too great for anyone to be able to identify any faces at all. For instance, the therapist on the balcony, the view as seen with Rachel's eyes from the train window is greatly enlarged as if it was seen through binoculars. Another classic type of
goof. I actually thought about this one. Is this the girl on the train? The window peaky murder?
He got it, folks!
Yep.
girl on the train. Chris, did you have it after the third one?
No, that that last one was a giveaway. So
I gotcha. Okay.
Oh, here. Jesus.
I mean, I read that book. I read that book and watched the movie, and I don't even remember these fucking people's names.
Mm-hmm. All right, folks. Here it is. The last movie. Also a 2016 movie for Chris. Here's the first goof. 2016 movies. Here we go. On the morning of the film festival, an exterior shot shows only Nadine's mother's car in the driveway. When Nadine comes downstairs, Darian and Krista are there, despite Darian's car not being in the driveway.
Oh, Darian. Where'd you park your car, Darian? How'd you get here? Did you swim the fjord?
I love this game. This is fun.
Darian. Nadia Darian.
Give me another one.
Okay. Second goof. When Nick picks up Nadine, when Nick picks up Nadine to hang out, the car pulls up with its lights on. However, when Nadine gets in and they depart, the lights are off.
Give me the next one.
All right. Young Nadine pushes the SUV.
I'm sorry. I don't know why this is making me giggle so much.
Young Nadine pushes the SUV's door lock to orange to keep her mom from opening the door and getting into the back seat. But the lock is still orange when Nadine opens it to run away from the car.
Fucking Young Nadine, old Nadine, dead Megan, alive Megan.
Swimming Eric.
Dental plan.
Lisa needs braces.
Give me your next one.
Okay, the final goof. When Nadine is having lunch in Mr. Bruner's room, she moves trays on his desk to prop her feet up. When she gets up to get her lunch to leave the room, the trays have returned to their original positions.
So there's a film festival.
Yeah. Feels important.
Yeah. There is
a flashback. Why am I helping you?
Do you want me to repeat the last clip? Or goof?
Something about trays. Yeah, go ahead. Do it again.
When Nadine is having lunch in Mr. Bruner's room, she moves trays on his desk to prop her feet up. When she gets up to get her lunch to leave the room, the trays have returned to their original positions. I will say that this movie did not have a ton of goofs listed on the page, so they're a little bit vague.
I don't know it. I guess I lose. So,
you want to venture a guess? 2016.
I mean, Edge of 17.
Ladies and gentlemen, he got it!
Yeah! Wow!
Yeah!
Wow! That's why you guess in this game, folks. That's why you guess in this game.
Yeah, that was good. Wow. Pull.
You guys went 10 for 10. So, as we kind of thought, we have a tie game, folks. Jeremy with 5 points. Chris with 5 points. Round four was dizzying, and it's stealing, and it's coming from behind. Chris coming out with the final answer at the last second. Amazing.
Good shit.
All right.
Good shit.
So the question, the tiebreaker here is fewest amount of clues needed, which I'm glad we kept up with.
Because we ended up needing it.
So fewest wins. It's like golf. You want a lower score. I will start by saying Jeremy has 15 clues that he used to get all five of his right. Chris required 17 clues.
Oh.
Jeremy wins.
Oh, that was close.
There you go.
Close. Wow. that was more fun than I expected, but only because I get to play around with the pretend plots in my head with the names of these people.
No doubt.
Yes, that's about, and now we, the next time we revisit this game, dear listener, which will probably almost certainly not be next week, it will be Chris or I that is the quiz master, and Barrett will be one of the contestants. And unless
right.
every single piece of feedback is "this sucks, we hate it, you guys are losers,"
I enjoyed it. I thought that was fun as hell.
Yeah, I had a good time.
You guys killed it. You guys killed it, man. That was that's as tight as it gets right there. 2 points, two clues separating, and really, the big one was round two. Jeremy pulling out fucking. What even was it? Knight's Tale. So you want to move on to recommends and wands?
Yeah, yep, let's do it.
Totes amazeballs.
They're great.
It won the Academy Award.
Oh, for what?
For best movie ever made.
As some of you may know, I had this second dose of the Pfizer vaccine, and didn't do anything for a while. And I was like, okay, maybe you got off scot-free on this one. And then about 10 o'clock that day, suddenly it was like,
oh, no. Ugh.
And so lots of time spent up dealing with, sickness and pain. Had some time to watch some movies. Jeremy had talked about Caitlin Dever being cast in the new Brian Duffield movie. And I was like, you know, I'd like to check up and see if there's anything else this guy's done that I haven't seen. Because I saw Spontaneous, and I like Spontaneous a lot.
Spontaneous is awesome. We both watched it after Jeremy's like full-throated recommend, and that movie fucking rules.
And I was looking at his guy must be the hottest thing in Hollywood right now, because he did Underwater, but he also had that Babysitter movie that I kind of like with
on Netflix.
Weaver.
He
wrote the screenplay for that. And then this Spontaneous, and then another movie that you may have heard of, Love and Monsters, he wrote a screenplay for.
The one that came out last year?
Yeah, it's nominated for Best Visual Effects, which it absolutely deserves, by the way. The visual effects in this movie are amazing. It stars Dylan O'Brien of Maze Runner fame in this. What we're told in this is that an asteroid was coming to smash into the Earth, and we Earthlings decided to throw nuclear missiles at it, and the fallout that occurred from the nuclear missiles started changing things on the Earth. So people started becoming monsters, and bugs and animals and everything started becoming monsters. And there was only 5% of the human population left, and they were all starting to form their own colonies. So Dylan O'Brien is one of these, and he was dating this girl, and I'm trying to remember her name right now.
Megan.
It's Megan's body.
And also dating Eric at some time, but they keep that hush hush. Jessica Henwick, who's one of the Sand Sisters in Game of Thrones, by the way. They're dating, and this happens, you know, while they have this amazing, you know, 17-year-old romance or whatever, but they get separated during this whole thing. He has his own colony and she has her own colony. And in his colony, he's the guy who isn't very good at a lot of things. He's not good at going out and fighting. He's not, you know, he's the guy who freezes whenever something happens. But he is, I mean, he's loved. It's just that, you know, he doesn't know that he's loved in this colony. And he gets he manages to contact his girlfriend through a radio, and he gets excited about possibly coming to see her again. But everybody in the colony, in his colony, is saying, you know what, dude, you're not very good at being, like, you know, out there at all. So, like, you know, taking a 7-day trip on the surface is suicide. You don't want to do this. And he's like, you know, screw this. I want to see the girl that I love. And it's been 7 years at this point. He decides he's going to do it. And, he goes on this, trip on the surface. Obviously there's a lot of, like, dangers involved. There are, you know, massive creatures that are like huge frogs and snails and stuff like that. Again, visual effects are really good in this.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it big budget?
I doubt it.
Interesting.
He quickly befriends a dog, and the dog is awesome. And he runs into a man and a little girl. Man is played by Michael Rooker. He's always good in a pinch for the apocalypse. I feel like in any movie that you watch The Trigger Effect, if you ever want to see Michael Rooker in the apocalypse.
Or The Walking Dead.
Yeah. He learned some things from them, and the little girl's, of course, adorable and almost like Hit Girl from Kick-Ass. So he learned some things from them. And so, you know, there's this journey, and he finally, you know, of course he's going to eventually find the colony where his girlfriend is. I won't tell you any more than that. You know, despite some predictability here and there about what's going to happen in this movie and everything, it's very enjoyable. And I think from a guy who we've seen some fun stuff like Babysitter or The Sitter, whatever the hell that movie's called, The Babysitter, Spontaneous and everything. This is a fun sort of compliment to those movies. If you like those, you'll like this. Type of thing. I had heard some comparisons to Warm Bodies. It's not really like that at all. There are certain similarities, but not nearly enough to make it like they're the same kind of movie. Love and Monsters. I recommend it.
Wasn't The Sitter the Jonah Hill movie?
Yeah. It was.
That's terrible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Ari Greener. That was David Gordon Green that directed it. Interesting.
I'm going to recommend a movie that I watched yesterday when we were not doing this podcast. We normally would do it on a Tuesday. Today is a Wednesday.
Oh.
And I think, because I searched through the email, I try not to bring recommends that have been discussed at length before. And the only match I found in my search was, it looks like we got invited to see a screener of this back in the fall. Mm-hmm. And I think one or more of you may have seen it and possibly interviewed somebody from it, but I couldn't find the podcast. But the movie is The Wolf of Snow Hollow.
Ah.
Okay. Yeah, I've seen the movie, but I don't remember getting the interview request or the screener request or anything like that.
Have you seen it, Barrett?
I have not. I hear good things about it, though.
Yeah, it's very interesting. This is from last year. I'm finding my horror tastes are growing a bit, particularly when there's a fair element of humor involved. And Spontaneous did a lot to help push me in this direction. And mm-hmm. Summary in the TV guide made this look like a blend of horror and comedy. And it is. And I liked it. I'm recommending it. But it's weird. Like, and I don't mean the plot is weird. I mean the way it's shot and the way it's acted is weird. Mm-hmm. There's an over-the-topness to the main character, who's the director, from what I understand,
yep,
and the writer, Jim Cummings. And it took me almost half the movie to realize, oh, his character is that far over the top. It was almost like he was playing it like the 30s or 40s in film, in terms of the affectation of the way he says his lines in some cases. Mm-hmm. It was distracting for me at first. And eventually mm-hmm. I settled into just accepting that that was what he was going for, because everybody else is great in this. Robert Forster is in this. I think it's his last role.
Oh, wow.
He's the sheriff who refuses to retire, even though he's basically falling apart. His son is Jim Cummings, the junior sheriff. And he keeps literally holding him up when they do press conferences. And then when people leave, like Robert Forster slumps back down into a chair because he's so close to death, but he refuses to retire. But he's funny as hell. The one line I wrote down I wanted to tell you about is when they're getting ready to go out on the hunt for the wolf. And he's got all the cops together for a pep talk, and he gives them a little pep talk. And then he says, "I'd ask you to pray with me if it weren't for the goddamn lawyers." There's a lot of funny lines and deliveries. The main character, who's the sheriff's officer, Jim Cummings again, he catches his daughter making out with this kid. And she's supposed to be at home because there's a wolf out there killing people, mostly girls. And he's screaming at her, and he's like, "You're supposed to be at home. Instead, you're out here making out with some guy in a truck." And just the way he says "in a truck" is just really funny. But there's a couple of odd, interesting, very interesting is what I would call this movie. Even the weird things about the way it's shot are interesting. There's a huge one shot in the middle of basically a snowed-in parking lot where, like, from five different directions, people are yelling at this sheriff because they need him for something. And he keeps going back and forth and answering and said, "Leave me alone. Shut up. You're yelling too loud." But the camera spins around him like three times that whole time. And I found it visually very interesting. You know, I can't tell you how much time passes in this movie. That was another frustrating thing. I couldn't tell if it was days or weeks or months. But essentially, there's a wolf in this tiny, snowy mountain town that's killing people and biting their crotches and making off with it. And this guy has to deal with his dad who refuses to retire and the police force and his own daughter. And at the end, it goes for a couple of emotional beats dramatically that I don't think it's earned, because the whole of it is so comic in tone. Even the score is like more boom, beep, boom, beep, boom, instead of like horror music kind of stuff. But I really liked it. I had a really good time. It's not really like anything I've ever seen. I thought the mystery of the wolf was very interesting, especially the way it wraps up. I'm recommending it.
His character he's got anger management problems, I believe is what it is. Is
the alcoholism.
Alcoholism, because he's got an anger thing.
Yeah, he's got anger management issues. I'm sorry, I misunderstood what you were saying. But the movie opens with him in AA.
He goes to AA, and he talks about his issues. But you can see even during his AA stuff, he's on edge. Like he can't.
Yeah.
He doesn't barely hold it in. You can just hear it in his voice how irritated he is with everybody. And when everybody starts talking about, you know, how this is a wolf, this is definitely a wolf, and blah, 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 and he's like, "No, it's not a fucking wolf. It's not a fucking wolf." It is something that is very well worth seeing.
I'm glad.
What is it on?
You liked it. I always do this. It's on Epics on my cable channel. So let me tell you where you can find it, kids. You can watch it now on Sling.
Pornhub. Oh.
You can probably rent it at Amazon.
I'm sure.
Yeah, it's the same place I saw Spontaneous. Epics has a lot of good stuff that the other channels don't ever get.
I got to check that out. That's up my alley, I think.
You would really enjoy. You would enjoy the camera work and his performance. Which again starts out really weird for me, but eventually won me over. I dug it.
Well, have I got a movie for you people?
Mm.
The Night Comes for Us.
Oh.
Oh. Oh.
He just had this movie.
This movie is so good. So this movie has been recommended to me a lot by people who know that we love the Raid movies.
Okay? Mm-hmm.
It's an Indonesian martial arts action movie featuring Iko Uwais from The Raid, Rama. And really the lead in this is Joe Taslim. Joe Taslim was also in The Raid, the first one, and he is going to be Sub-Zero in the upcoming Mortal Kombat movie, which has actually come out by the time this comes out. He is an Indonesian martial arts legend. This came out in 2018, and because people had recommended it so much, and because, you know, I know how good Iko Uwais is, and, you know, especially in his native language, I was like, all right, it's on Netflix. Pulled the trigger. It's directed by an Indonesian director, Timo Chazano, which I probably butchered that name. And what I got was maybe the most violent and glorious movie I have ever seen. It reminded me very much of the first time I saw the Raid movies out of order. I saw Raid 2 first, and then I saw the original Raid. And when I watched the Raid 2, I had never, ever, ever seen action done like this. This is, I think, before John Wick came out. And even so, this is at a level that I was not expecting. So brutal and so well choreographed that it's a cartoon, folks. This movie, The Night Comes for Us, has a lot of blood, has a lot of violent deaths. It's so funny. I was cackling the entire time. It was so much fun. The plot, as it is actually very good. This guy, Joe Taslim's character, is a part of an elite assassination group, but he decides, you know, I'm going to defect because he's saving this girl from a massacre. Now, the entirety of that elite assassin army is after him. He goes back home to team up with his old crew, who is made up by this fantastic cast of characters. I can't really even describe this movie enough to where it expresses the joy that I had watching it. Now, it's a little bit overlong. It's not quite as good as The Raid and The Raid 2. But man, it's right there. It's got a decent amount of dramatic beats. The in-between stuff could be worked down. The fight scenes, though, the fight scenes are, even compared to Raid levels, I think a step above. They set up these things so beautifully. Both in an all versus one fight, or many of those, and a one versus one fight, and a two versus one fight. The choreography in this movie is absolutely insane. The way that they use, there's one in a butcher shop. There's one in a butcher shop. There's one that's beautifully shot in a hotel lobby. There's one in an apartment building where these massive amounts of people are coming through and they're funneling through one door. So they're just beating ass at this horde of henchmen that are coming in. It's so good. It's so good. And then the final thing, which is one character against another character. I won't tell you who wins, but it is absolutely brutal and beautiful. And it will make everything on your body hard. So, The Night Comes for Us is right up U2's alley. I mean, you could just put this on and just grin to yourself all the way through. I cannot recommend this more. I was giddy.
All right.
Strong.
Yeah. Strong. It's on Netflix. It's on Netflix. So, everybody's got a Netflix account, or your mom's, or your cousin's, or whatever. So log on to Netflix. And
I have your mom's Netflix account.
It's weird. Chris has my mom's Netflix account, which is actually my account, which is weird. But you know,
I mean, when you look at the history, it's like I don't remember watching that.
Why did I watch Blue is the Warmest Color six times?
Why did I watch it three times? I'm going to recommend, we did this interview with George Gallo, which I really enjoyed doing that. That if you don't typically listen to the interviews, the George Gallo one is well worth it, I think, just because he's so engaging. In the middle of that, he starts quoting The In-Laws, a movie from 1979, Peter Falk, Alan Arkin movie. He quotes it like straight up. You know, he has it memorized. I went ahead and watched this movie because I had never seen it before. I don't know if I saw the remake. The remake had Michael Douglas and it had Albert Brooks.
Yeah. And it's not bad, I don't think, but it ain't the original. Yeah.
I don't remember if I even saw it. It's in that era where I would have, but I don't remember if I saw it. But Peter Falk, I'm on a Peter Falk kick lately because I've been watching Columbo, the old Columbo series and everything. It's always good to just see actors outside of what they're really known for and everything. And Peter Falk in this movie is so good, man. I don't know if Peter Falk may be one of the most underrated actors we've ever had.
It could be, yeah.
We don't talk about him very much. There's a getting well ahead of what I'm talking about, the plot of this movie. There's a scene in here where Peter Falk does something with his face when he's talking to his son, that it, you know, there's no words or anything, but expresses so many things in the end of it, and it's just so well done. Just like it's like that is just, that's really good acting. The movie starts off with a treasury like truck getting robbed. The people who are robbing it don't want to steal the money inside of it. They want to steal the engravings of new American money so that they can sell it to other countries and the other countries can make their own money and basically cause worldwide inflation around the world. Mm-hmm. The people who rob this, this truck, give the engravings to Peter Falk. So we're like, oh, okay. Peter Falk is kind of a bad guy in this movie. But whoever he's supposed to sell this to wants him to sell it by the next day or 2 days from now or something like that, which is nearly impossible because his son is getting married, to this family that's headed by Alan Arkin, who's a dentist. This family has started to become a little suspicious of Peter Falk because they never see him around. He's always doing business things. He's always traveling and everything. So Peter Falk finally shows up to a dinner and so he can meet the in-laws. And so they find out that he's a little off. He's just a little bit off. They don't know what it is. And then, you know, there's a point where he says, I want to make a phone call to somewhere, but somewhere that's really far. Like he's at Alan Arkin's house. He's like, can I make this call? Like the farthest place away in this house, because sometimes I have to talk to these people and it gets really, really loud. And when I have to yell at these people, and they're like, yeah, go try the basement or whatever. And his son goes, oh, my dad, and his mysterious phone calls. And then Peter Falk comes back and he's like, what did you say? Starts like yelling at his son about those mysterious phone calls and everything. So they're like, oh, I don't know about this. So Peter Falk wants to get something out of his safe the next day. He wants to get something out of his safe at his office. But he sees two guys that he knows will cause him trouble outside the door. So he goes over to Alan Arkin at his dentist practice or whatever. And he says, could you meet with me for about 5 minutes? 5 minutes is all it's going to take. And he gets Alan Arkin to go inside and take this thing out of the safe. The two people out in front are wise to it. And then they start chasing Alan Arkin. And then suddenly Alan Arkin is on this huge, like, this international conspiracy thing involving engravings, U.S. Currency engravings and everything. And Peter Falk tells him, I'm not a bad guy. I'm actually CIA. And you know, but of course there are a lot of questions about whether he's telling the truth about being with the CIA. So this becomes this, you know, this madcap comedy where, like, you know, they're Alan Arkin finds himself, and Alan Arkin, this is the perfect role for Alan Arkin because he's the innocent, you know, he's always like, you know, oh my God, why is this going to happen to me, man? You know, he's the perfect actor for these type of things. He's obviously not a criminal, but he's going to have to start, he starts having to evade the government and everything who show up at his home. He has to run away from them. And suddenly, before you know it, he's on a plane to Honduras. And like, it's just all sorts of stuff going on there. But anyway, Peter Falk and Alan Arkin are a great team in this. And I'm going to recommend The In-Laws through George Gallo. Thanks for that.
They remade this, didn't they, with Michael Douglas? Did you say that?
I did. Yeah.
Yeah. As you were talking about the plot, I was like, I saw this movie.
Oh, I'm telling you, man, I've seen this original one a long time ago, and I enjoyed it. I've seen the remake a few times, and I kind of dig it. Michael Douglas plays a great, like, secret agent, and Albert Brooks, of course, plays a great mild-mannered Alan Arkin type of dentist guy. And but yeah, I love the story. I'm going to go back and watch the thing. I see there's a young David Paymer in this movie.
Here it is. And this is one of my favorite all time skills that I have, is seeing an actor when they are way younger than they were before you really knew about them and knew that they were famous. I saw him and I was like, I know I've seen this dude before. I think it's David Paymer. Yes, indeed, it was him. By the way, there's a lot of things involved in this movie where I, you know, claim that we're in a simulation and everything. Jeremy, you know, we watched Happy Gilmore recently.
Yes.
And there's a thing about the Price is Right in there and everything. Well, in The In-Laws, there's a part where David Paymer and Peter Falk are watching The Price is Right. And Peter Falk's like, what is this? And he goes, you don't know what The Price is Right is? Oh my God. And he's like, how long has this show been on? He goes, since 1911. You know? There's a point where Peter Falk doesn't know what Price is Right is. And in Happy Gilmore, Adam Sandler confuses Bob Barker for somebody who's on Let's Make a Deal. So there's more simulation stuff going on.
Nice.
Yes, there is.
Very good. What you got?
I got another recommend. I can't believe this week that I'm not even half warning anything. I'm just recommending two. It's a movie called Critical Thinking, starring John Leguizamo and Michael Kenneth Williams and a bunch of people you probably haven't seen. I probably wouldn't have watched this if there'd been something else on that interested me, because everything about the description looks just screams run of the mill, good teacher at a bad school type of story. And you know what? It kind of is, but that's okay because it's a true story. And I did not know this. And it's also directed by John Leguizamo himself.
Mm-hmm. Really?
I mean, he stars as a real teacher who started an elective class at one of the poorest schools in Miami for chess. And initially the school and the other teachers just kind of treat that like detention. They just keep sending troubled students to his elective for chess, and he keeps teaching them chess. They get pretty good, and they end up going to, I don't know, there's like four competitions they go to in this movie, and I don't know which one's state or regionals or what have you. But they do good enough at this first tournament to qualify for the next one, but just barely. But a lot of these kids have personal life issues going on. Like Michael Williams plays the dad of one of them. And first you think he's going to be like Lawrence Fishburne in Boys in the Hood, where he's like, he's tough, but he's a good father. But no, he's a jackass. He's a dick. He keeps telling his kid to play him in chess. And then when his kid finally beats him, he gets mad and storms off like a baby. Another kid has lost his job. That causes his mom to kick him out of the house. And he literally has no option but to end up working with this local drug dealer because he's good with numbers. They've all got their own issues. And I don't think much about this movie is going to surprise you. There are probably plenty of good teacher sport movie cliches strewn throughout it. But knowing that it was based on a true story, which I didn't until about halfway through, I decided to look it up. It really made the movie more interesting to me, because a lot of these movies about a good teacher at a bad school are just pure fiction, or they've been so run through the ringer that it's, you know, exaggerated stuff or what have you. And some of them are based on true stories. Please don't cuss me out in the comments. But at the end, it does like what a Million Dollar Arm does, and it cuts to footage of the real students, the real chess players that you'd seen throughout the movie. And 94 on Rotten Tomatoes, so I don't think I'm too crazy out here, but I just enjoyed it. It was pretty wholesome, entertaining, good performances, and I think I need somebody to back me up, but I think the chess is pretty good here. Now, I'm not a chess person, but they throw around chess terminology and dare me to Google and keep up. And I would wager most of it is real. You know, he gives the kids nicknames based on the style of famous chess people that they play like. I was absorbed. I watched it beginning to end. I couldn't put it down if it was a book.
Nice.
Yeah. And now you need to watch Queen's Gambit.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, I really do. I would like to. That's on my list for sure. And I've stopped putting everything on the list. There's just a bunch of content I'm never going to get to. But that's that true. One is one that I'm going to get to.
That's true. Why do we even make lists? Why do we make lists sometimes? You know, like I went through this video I saw. Edgar Wright was like, here are a bunch of movies that you may have never heard of that you need to watch. So I wrote them all down and I'm like, all right. When am I ever going to watch these? I don't know. I mean, got them down on a list, though.
Oh, Jesus. Look at that. Johnny Legg's directing something. Has he directed anything else?
Just checking that out.
I don't think so.
Looks like he did a TV movie called Undefeated.
Yeah, 17 years ago.
Yeah. That's about that guy that was undefeated.
Yeah,
he didn't lose. It was about that guy. The guy who wrote it, Dito Montee, did a movie called A Guide to Recognizing Your Saints. I don't know if you've ever seen that, but
yeah, old Dito.
He did that. Yeah. He did a movie called Fighting that has Channing Tatum in it.
But that's
in between those, he swam across a fjord between Norway and England.
When was he not swimming across the fjord?
All right. I won't spend a lot of time on my last, what I call the wreck a yawn, because it's the definition of a strike down the middle. It's just like it's 52% positive on Rotten Tomatoes. It's like a 5.7 on IMDb. It is literally just good enough to hold your attention, which it did. It's called Safe House, 2012 movie with Denzel Washington and Ryan Reynolds and Vera Farmiga and Brendan Gleeson, Robert Patrick, and all that stuff. And man, it's just good enough where you're like, yeah. And it's kind of because Denzel elevates everything that he's in, right?
Yes, he does.
He plays a, of course, the best ever. He tested off the charts at the CIA on the farm, and he went rogue. And now he's turned himself into the embassy, and he has to go to a safe house, which is managed by CIA rookie Ryan Reynolds, who's dating a French woman, and he fucks her in the shower.
Ha 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 ha. All right.
Anyway, he's bored because nobody's coming to his safe house. He's in South Africa. He's in Cape
Town. Nobody will come to my safe
house. Nobody comes to my safe house. I want to be in the shit. I want to be in the field. And so Denzel turns himself in South Africa. Immediately, within 2 seconds, the safe house is attacked. Robert Patrick gets killed.
And, it is pretty quick.
And off they go, running through the streets of South Africa with Ryan Reynolds and Denzel. Sounds like fun, doesn't it? Have you guys seen this movie? You probably have seen this movie, right?
Yeah.
Haven't seen this movie, you've seen this movie. They're running through South Africa. Denzel gives him the switcheroo because he's the master and he's the student. And then Ryan Reynolds gets the upper hand. And then Vera Farmiga is shouting orders at a TV. And Brendan Gleeson is kind of her boss, but not really. And so they get on a plane to go to Cape Town because, you know, it's only like a 30-minute trip.
You can swim across the fjord to get there.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yep. And, you know, the ending is a little twisty, but man, I saw that coming a long way away. The feature of this movie that I could not get past, it's perfectly fine, is Ryan Reynolds is like working hard to not be himself. He is serious as fuck in this movie. He barely cracks a smile, except when he's fucking the girl in the shower.
Mm-hmm.
But like he's there's no cracking wise. There's no hitman's bodyguard aspect to him. He is just, he's got this 1,000-yard stare and he's talking like this and he's crying over his girl that he can't see. She doesn't know he's CIA until he tells her, and then she beats him up and he sends her far away. And that is such a weird thing because I understand playing against type. That's cool. But he's cultivated such a brand that, like, you would make this movie 30% more watchable if it had a little bit of Ryan Reynolds in there. You know what I'm saying?
It's a brand,
man. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I actually, it's almost the same movie as The Hitman's Bodyguard.
I was going to say, it basically
is so much more fun to watch.
And I don't even think Hitman's, I mean, look at the fucking,
it's not good.
I can't believe we're getting another one of those movies. It could fit as a trilogy, and he's just, this is before he became a wisecracker. It's just there. It's okay. It's average. It's the,
are you talking about The Hitman's Bodyguard or Safe House?
I'm talking about Safe House. It's like a ballpark hot dog. It's not, it's not fine dining, but you're not mad that you ate it.
No, I felt good about it, man. I was like, I found it on HBO Max. It's a perfect Saturday afternoon movie. I just finished the edit for this podcast, and I was like, screw it. Let's just have this on. And it got my attention.
This was a weekend that I was not expecting when I was working in a movie theater to be one of the biggest I had ever run into. Like Safe House was a huge opening weekend monster of a hit. $40 million it made. This was a Valentine's, the Friday before Valentine's that came out.
Wow.
The other movies that came out during that movie that nobody remembers called The Vow came out the same weekend. Rachel McAdams and Channing Tatum. It made $40-something million on its opening weekend.
Counter programming Valentine's Day.
And then you had Journey to the Mysterious Island, the rock thing, came out and made $27 million on its opening weekend.
Jeez.
That was just one of those, like, you're like, when you looked at the movies that were coming out, you're like, we might do decent with this one and might do decent with that one. Ended up, they all just, everybody wanted to see movies that week.
Feeling good.
Responded with their cold, hard cash. Reviewing, Jeremy recommended The Wolf of Snow Hollow, and he recommended the John Leguizamo chess joint. Critical thinking.
Never thought you'd say those words.
That's right. Barrett, sorry about the coughing today, folks.
I understand.
Barrett fully recommended The Night Comes for Us,
It's so good.
So I may have to watch this myself. And he reco-yawned Safe House, the Denzel Washington, Ryan Reynolds team up that made tons of money. I recommended Love and Monsters. Brian Duffield wrote the script. I can't actually remember who directed it, unfortunately. I'm kind of a dick that way, but it was mainly my draw towards this movie. Recommended Love and Monsters. I also recommended The In-Laws because we interviewed George Gallo, and George Gallo was all over that movie when he talked about it.
The 1979 one, kids, not the 2003 one.
Yeah, although if I'm hearing you guys correctly, the remake ain't all that bad.
It's not all that bad. I tell you what, that game, remember when we played that game?
I remember.
It was awesome. I want to play it again just as
I'll never forget. I'll never forget the fjords and moving Megan's dead body through a tunnel.
I love how Jeremy is reconstructing this plot.
That's what everybody's doing though. When they're like sitting there going, film festival, dead body.
Somebody with their feet up on the desk.
Yeah. Gatling gun. Okay. That's going to do it for this week. Keep going to Sincast presented by CinemaSins on Facebook. By the way, if you have stopped going to Facebook for some reason and you go to other places to comment and everything, let me know if there's a reason, for that. Cause Facebook's comments have gone way down, in the past few days. Now, I mean, the past few months. And I don't know. Is it me, guys? Is it me? Do you not like me?
It's definitely not you.
Is that what it is? I'm taking it personally, guys. No. Yeah, if it's just Facebook, I understand that. I don't like Facebook at all. You think I like going to Facebook? Fuck no. But I would like to know, you know, sort of what's going on, because you know I look through this and I'm like, man, this person used to comment all the time and now they don't.
I have a possible answer for you. It's a long shot.
Okay.
I have stopped going to Facebook to look at the comments because for about the last 2 months, those buttons are broken. Mm. And if it says 8 comments and I click, it will show me 2.
Yeah.
And then I used to be able to click all comments or view all, and it would show me all of them. And when I click that, nothing happens. Literally.
Yeah, really?
I've tried it in multiple browsers. And so people who comment may have the same experience. It may be my operating system. I don't know. But if other people are having that same glitchy, buggy thing, that may explain why comments are down.
So. All I'm saying is I encourage you to go wherever our other comments are. And like, especially Discord, where I will go and I'll click over there every once in a while to see if anybody wants to say something to me personally. You know, if you have anything about Facebook on there, just give us a shout, because I actually have considered not using Facebook anymore for a variety of reasons and for a lot of obvious reasons. So I just kind of want to know. I'm encouraging comments, and I've had similar things, Jeremy, like not that specifically, but like I will go to the thing and it'll say one comment. And I'll click on the one comment and there'll be 5 comments or there'll be one like, and you click on the likes and there's like 10. So like, why are they having an issue with counting the comments and counting the likes and all this? And I'm sure there's going to be somebody who's like, well, you just got to have your settings at this and that. No settings. I will not hear a settings answer to this.
Line must be drawn here.
That's right. Anyway, we're also on CinemaSins Twitter, Music Video Sins Twitter. We're on Discord. And if you want to get on Discord, there's a Facebook caveat to that. You can go to Facebook and, private message me and I can give you a link to that. But if we start not using Facebook anymore, we're going to have to come up with a different thing for that.
You can post on SoundCloud or something.
Yeah. And we are also on SoundCloud. That's going to do it for this week. It's Chris Atkins and Jeremy Scott and Barrett Sherr. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening. Comment on our episodes on our SoundCloud page. Check us out on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Reddit.
and be sure to visit CinemaSins.com.
I like how I completely killed the Not Work Chat channel by posting a salad. Five p.m. yesterday, I posted a picture of my salad, and the place has gone dark.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. That was also surreal, because I was just like, I was like, oh, that's going on. Oh. And
you're all like feverish and
angry. Yeah, and like, I was trying to keep up with it, and I was like, I got it on. I had it on CNN for a while, and I was like, of course, you know, the time they said that they were going to announce the verdict, during that entire window, they didn't do it.
And so
during one of my many showers yesterday, because it was the only time I felt human.
Oh man,
I had it on CNN on XM, but you know, CNN on XM is like 5 minutes behind or something. It's something crazy. And I was listening.
Oh,
to that.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Yeah.
And I was listening to that, and I was like, "All right, I'm gonna turn this off," and because they still haven't gotten to the verdict yet, and I'm gonna turn on the TV, and as I'm turning on the TV, Jeremy texts or Slacks not guilty or what? I mean guilty or whatever, and I was like, "Oh, okay, well, I guess that's that."
No, god damn it. Anyway. It's a bunch of like Alt Nation. There's one throwback, which is like things from the alt stuff from the 2000s. There's one that's like new artists. There's one that's like top 100, like ones that charted. And there's another one that's more like obscure and stuff like that. And man, I went through those and I was just like beefing. I don't even
know
what that
means. Are they on the app or online only, or are they on the radio?
Yeah.
I think they've had these for a while, actually.
Are you serious?
They for sure had the Alt Nation 2000s one. I even talked about it on Sincast or like during this kind of discussion here, bringing it up. The 2000s one, the thing that upset me about the 2000s one is that it wasn't necessarily... It wasn't necessarily like me turning on Alt Nation in 2005 and hearing what I heard back in 2005. Right. It was all the big artists that you hear on Alt Nation, the regular one, only condensed into this channel.
Right.
So a lot of Death Cab for Cutie, a lot of Weezer, a lot of, you know, I mean, and I'm like sitting there going, give me fucking Morningwood. Give me, you know, give me
Elbow. I say that every day.
Yeah, exactly. Give me, what's the other one? There's
Kaiser Chiefs.
Yeah, Kaiser Chiefs. There's like a ton of bands that you know that made it, you know, that make that environment what it is. And it's, you know, when you're just playing Death Cab and just playing Foo Fighters, God, Foo Fighters, they play Foo Fighters
too much. A lot of Foo Fighters.
They do. They're kind of running into the ground for me.
Yeah. There's 2K hits. There's 2010s alt rock hits.
Yeah.
There's top hits. There's Alt Nation.
Yeah.
And I thought there was another one, but those Lithium channels, God, talk about a boner. Deep cuts. I heard a deep cut from the, Real Big Fish album.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The deepest cuts you get are those like hosted shows, right? And personalized channel.
Oh,
like,
for sure.
I don't know if they still have the Tom Petty channel, but when they did,
they do.
I heard like when it was either a Tom Petty song or a song that inspired Tom Petty, and every song that inspired Tom Petty on that channel I had never heard in my life, and it was like
right.
all deep cuts from here's the band I smoked weed with in 61 and this made this album in their garage. I never recognized any of it.
By the way, I'll bring this up again. I know Barrett would especially enjoy these, but Jeremy, you might too. YouTube has this. There's this guy called Professor of Rock.
Oh, I need to write that down. Yeah.
Now he's entirely too positive about fucking everything. He doesn't come off that way. Like, he's not like, hey, this is exciting, you know, like that type of thing. He says things in a very normal manner, but like everything, like he, you know, in one episode you'll swear that he loves the Smiths and only the Smiths, and then the next episode it'll be like, oh boy, Van Halen was so important to me, and oh, the, you know, it's just like, you know, like, do you hate anything, you know, like it's just those are really great deep dives into albums, songs, bands themselves, especially around the 70s, 80s, 90s era.
My wife is gone, and I had a beef stick.
That might be our cold open right there.
I really miss posting dick pics.
What we Something can do that I just is haven't been able
to do during the pandemic.
The three of us could do it and be like, pick the dick.
I've been so stressed I haven't been taking many dick pics during the pandemic. But now that I got my facts.
That's right. Camera's going right back down in the pants.
I'm going to get OnlyFans up in this bitch.
I love that Dave Chappelle bit when he's doing the Michael Jackson trial and or the mock trial. And he's like, you know, you said he identified his penis or the kid identified his penis. He's like, ma'am, I couldn't even identify my own penis. Me and my penis are like this. How are we doing? Are we good?
I think we've already lost at least three listeners. But we've gained, somehow we've gained two.